Hi, I'm Lisa Levin.
And I'm Julie Sapper.
We're the co-founders of Run Farther and Faster and co-hosts of the podcast under the same name.
Well, we started this podcast as a Boston Marathon-focused podcast based on the experiences from our combined 31 finishes. We cover all things running-related.
We've coached runners of all levels and goal distances all over the world for over 13 years.
Thanks so much for joining us. We are so excited you're here.
Hey, Julie.
Hey, Lisa. How are you?
I am doing well. How are you?
Doing well. Surviving and thriving in our first quote unquote snowstorm in 2 years in the DC area. It was quite a whopping for DC. I believe schools were closed because of 3 or 4 inches, but it happens here and they just don't have the equipment or the manpower, I guess, to be able to shovel efficiently and salt to get kids to school. So our kids, as we were just talking about, haven't been to school basically all week.
Just today, and that's it. And then we're expecting more snow tomorrow and probably won't have school tomorrow. There's already, speculation that there will be no school tomorrow. So interesting. I was just telling you my story of moving here to the DC area when I was young and in fourth grade and waking up the first day I was supposed to go to my new school. And my mom told us, two very disappointed kids, that we weren't going to get to go to our first day of our new school because school was canceled because it was supposed to snow. And it hadn't even started snowing yet and they had canceled school. So that's sort of a theme here. But like you said, it's been a couple of years actually since we've had snow, and we've had some pretty good training cycles in the past winters where we really haven't had a lot of interruptions because of snow and ice. And this did throw definitely a wrench into training. And we've been working with our runners all week to kind of move things around and find alternative plans because nobody wants to go out and try to run in this and end up with an injury because of slipping and falling in the ice early in a training cycle, especially for those of us who are training for spring races and spring marathons and Boston training that we're starting. So we have advised our runners that if there is any doubt, if there's any ice out or if it's below freezing and there's a chance of black ice, really to look for alternatives. And that could mean a treadmill, or if we have a lot of runners, myself included, that don't have a treadmill, don't have access to it. You could do cross training, or you could skip a day and we'll figure it out. It's early in the training cycle. It is not a really critical time. And even if you missed several days of training this week due to weather, it's not critical, and it's just not worth the risk of going out and falling, or really, a lot of people, it's just hard to run in. We've had runners in areas that are like negative. We have a runner in Bozeman, Montana, where it was negative, I think 49.2 one day. She sent me or 39.2. She sent me the reading from her thermometer from outside. I mean, that's like, you can't run in that. So, hopefully we won't have too many weeks like this, but this is the first one we've had in a few years. So it did throw a little bit of a wrench into training.
And also, you do you. So if you're in a training group and a lot of folks feel comfortable going out on a day that might feel questionable for you, don't feel like you're slacking off by choosing to take your run or workout indoors. For example, many people find it's fine to run after the snow's melted on certain paved trails and whatnot, and it looks clear. But maybe for you, you feel like you're a little nervous because you're just coming back from injury, or you're just coming back from a very tough week where maybe you're not paying attention as much on your run and you just want to relax and not look at your footing the whole time. Not the best time to head out and take that risk. So while there are plenty of folks that are completely comfortable running in conditions that are perhaps a little slushy, maybe a little icy in spots, if you're not comfortable on a particular day, don't doubt yourself. Just take your run indoors. There's no wrong or right answer. Actually, there is a wrong answer. Don't try to go out when it's icy, period. There's no reward for running when it's icy out. And ice, as you mentioned, Lisa, includes black ice. There's a lot of black ice the day or two or even 3 days after the snow. It looks like it's completely melted. That's when there's a lot of potential to slip on black ice. We've had a lot of runners over the years blow their entire season from slipping on black ice after they were confident that everything had melted. So really pay attention on your runs and understand that if something looks shiny, it's definitely ice, especially early in the morning. And just really try to be mindful. And if you're not confident about your abilities to be mindful early in the morning when it's dark, and when you're running, take it inside.
Yep. Very good advice. And especially because a lot of us run early in the morning and it's not light out early in the morning yet. Can't really see what you're running on. So I have been personally sticking to neighborhood streets that are treated and, you know, plowed and very clear in during the day, and just running on low traffic neighborhood streets. I haven't been trying to go on sidewalks. I've actually confined myself to my neighborhood because I haven't wanted to go on the sidewalks to get out of my neighborhood. So my neighbors probably think I'm crazy. I've been doing a lot of loops in my neighborhood. So that's always an option. But if you don't have a safe option, like you said, take it inside, skip the workout, do equal time cross training if you have access to cross training equipment. We'll get back to hopefully some normal training and normal weather soon. And speaking of weather, Boston, that's always a big topic for us for Boston. And, you know, we obviously aren't going to speculate now what Boston weather could be like. You can't even speculate about 24 hours before. You never really know exactly what Boston weather is going to be like. But be prepared for anything. We have, over the years, our years of running Boston, have had everything from 86 degree heat and sun to sub-freezing rain and sleet in our face with a headwind the entire time. So you never really know. And truly, if it's safe out, and that's a big caveat, if it's safe, running in different conditions will give you the confidence that you'll be able to do that on race day. So don't be afraid to go out if it's raining out, as long as it's not icy out. Since we never know what Boston will bring, and it is wasted energy to try to guess what Boston will be like.
Absolutely. And don't try to guess what Boston weather will be like till you start packing. And we've got a while until that. So yeah, exposing yourself is a great opportunity to alleviate those concerns, because then when you toe the line, if the weather is less than ideal, you can say to yourself, well, I've run in all of these conditions, I'm prepared. And to that end, speaking of simulating Boston, there's a lot of talk about, especially this time in Boston training, just as we're ramping it up, that you need to run a lot of hills. And we're here to say that while certainly it's ideal to have some hills in your route so that you're not running completely flat routes all the time, you do not need to seek out the biggest hills in your area and run up and down those hills to prepare for Boston. And sometimes that kind of running, which although it does develop strength, can also lead to injury, especially if it's something you're not used to. So if you're not someone who generally does hill repeats, don't start doing hill repeats 2-3 times a week for several weeks to prepare for Boston. Ease into it. If you want to add some hills, pick a hilly route. If you want to add some hill repeats, don't do 10 of them, do maybe 3 or 4 and go up the hill with good form, focusing more on your form, not as much on your speed, and then gently for your recovery, running down the hill. But you don't
And for even- practicing form on downhill, that's actually where people, I think, don't, you know, lose focus, is that it's the downhills at Boston that are really gonna, that can really get you if you're not prepared. So practice doing, going downhill, practice your form, whether you're running easy downhill or maybe you're doing some pickups downhill, practice that form. Don't focus just on uphill, focus on the downhills too.
That's a great point. Like when, if your recovery is downhill, that doesn't mean your form has to get all sloppy. Use your recovery downhill to think about your form when you're running downhill. And you also don't have to do hill repeats to prepare for Boston at all. You can also do strength work. So you want to talk a little bit about what we mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, actually more important than running hills. Running a lot of hills can mentally prepare you for Boston. A lot of people want to run hills because they want that mental preparation. It doesn't necessarily physically prepare you, and you'll actually end up overtrained or overexerting yourself, too much intensity with the hills. So what is more important in running hills and being strong on hills is your strength. So your core strength, your glute strength, your quads, your hamstrings, lower body strength is really important. And for our runners, we actually work with one of our trainers, Kelly Redmond, to put together hill specific strength. And we include those for our runners in their schedules. And it doesn't have to be high intensity strength. It's not an hour long session. It's very simple body weight exercises that help prepare your body to run strong and efficiently on hills. So I understand runners, and we get a lot of runners who come to us and we're coaching them for Boston who say, like, where give me more hills, give me more hills. I need these hills for what is, you know, what do Heartbreak Hill look like? And I want to find a hill that exactly replicates that. And I want to do a lot of hill repeats there. And we get that for the mental confidence purpose, and especially if you haven't done Boston before and you don't know what to expect. But we'd rather see more time dedicated to strength and form, you know, good hill form.
Absolutely. So if you decide you do want to include hill training in your workouts for here for Boston, just be mindful that when you add a new stimulus to any training plan, you want to add it gradually. So week one of Boston Marathon training, even if a plan has in it to do 8 times 40-second hill sprints, if you haven't done that before, now is not the time to do 8. Start out with just a few. And a good workout to do if you want to work on hill training without implementing too much hill training is do just a couple of hill sprints or hill repeats where you're going up a 45% grade. Doesn't have to be a
4 to 5. I just want to clarify. You don't need 45 in angle, 45.
4 to 5, not 45. Yes. Percent grade hill. Focus on your form. Do maybe 3-4 of those hill repeats. Jog for like 5 minutes and then do 1 to 2 miles at your marathon pace. So what you're doing in that workout is you're building up the confidence to run on a hill without overly taxing your body. And then you're going to simulate the feeling of running at marathon pace after doing hills, which is, of course, what Boston feels like after you finish the hills between miles 16 and 21. So do you need to find the hilliest route to run your long run? No. Should you find the hilliest route to run your long run ever? Not necessarily. And that may not be a good stimulus to add to your training if you normally don't run hills. The last thing you want to do is blow all of your training on a really tough long run when your body's not used to that.
Yeah. And we've had runners that's happened to where they've sought out really hilly routes and said, I'm going to go run this really hilly route. And they end up having Achilles issues or some kind of issue kind of breaks them. And it wasn't worth that. But I will say, I do think it can be helpful in some long runs to at least simulate the Boston course where you've got downhill, mostly downhill, the first part of your route and then uphills at the end. And so if you have that, you don't have to hit them hard or at marathon pace, but at least getting your body used to that. Having some downhill in the beginning and then uphill toward the end, that's mentally and physically, that's good preparation. But like you said, it does not have to be every run and it doesn't have to be the super duper hard hilly run. And if you live in the Boston area, you can run the course and there are always group runs, groups out on the course, especially later in the season, some long runs on the course. So if you live in the area or can get to Boston, you can certainly do some of those. But there's enough now out on YouTube and blogs and other information where you can actually pretty well visualize visualize the course. So I think it's more of a mental thing for most people is that they're worried about those hills. They've heard so much about Heartbreak Hill hills and they feel like they need to over prepare for them. But again, smart preparation is better than over preparation.
Absolutely. And speaking of preparation, now is the perfect time to test your fueling. So it may feel like it's early in the training cycle, but think about it. You only have so many opportunities to test your fueling in a longer run effort. And while we do recommend fueling during shorter workouts that entail speed or tempo work as well, let's be realistic. One day a week, you're out there for several hours doing your long run. And if you add it up, there aren't that many opportunities before race day to tweak your nutrition. So the earlier you start, the better. So we like to talk about not trying anything new on race day. So if you want to use the nutrition offered on the course, which is Morton, now is a great time to purchase your Morton from thefeed.com. They do not sponsor our podcast, but they are a great resource for fuel because they usually have some type of discount and give it a try.
Let me add one thing real quick. Running Warehouse also has Morton and you can use our code. Which is, I've got to look it up quickly. Is it still RFF19? I forget, but you can still use our code to get 10% off Morton. That's how I ordered it last time I ordered it too.
Awesome.
So just as an FYI, I have to look up our code. Yes. I'll look it up while we're on.
Okay. And I'll put it in the show notes too.
Yes.
That's great. So yeah, so definitely think about the nutrition that you want, the fueling that you want to use, purchase a lot of it so that you have it on hand so you're not looking for it, race on the morning of your long run, trying to find it. You have it handy. And I'm guilty of this. I can't tell you how many times I've gone out for a long run. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm out of fuel, and I'll grab some dates or something else in my house, which is totally fine. But if you're trying to practice with the fuel you intend to use on race day, it's really important to have that ready for your long run. And you may not be as hungry or thirsty during these cold weather runs, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't eat or drink as frequently. So really try your best to practice fueling every 30, 35 minutes, because that is really optimal to be able to get enough calories, carbohydrates in your body during a marathon effort run. If you find initially that that's not working for you, that doesn't mean necessarily that you can't do it. Just like I mentioned before, you're introducing a new stimulus. So maybe try for your first time half a gel every 30 minutes to get your body used to absorbing calories every 30 minutes. And then the next run, long run, bump it up a little bit more and practice your fueling on your midweek tempo or speed workout efforts too, because your body absorbs fuel differently when you're running at harder efforts. And of course, when you're out there running your spring marathon, whether it's Boston or another, generally you're going to be running at a hard effort. So you need to make sure your body's able to absorb that fuel without feeling like you're going to throw up your cookies during the race.
Yeah, that's great advice. And we just actually had a nutrition call with Kelsey Pontius, one of the registered dietitians we work with, who really went through all of this kind of preliminary, the early phase nutrition fueling pointers. And we talk a lot about our body physiologically adapting to process glycogen. So the body actually produces receptors to process the glycogen and the carbs. So people ask, well, why do I need to practice early? Why do I need to start practicing? It's because our body physiologically adapts so that we can process that fuel. So we just had a really great session with her. We actually have once a month a session with Kelsey leading up to spring marathons in Boston, in particular, going through the different phases of nutrition through our training. And so I think that is, a really good point. And like you said, if in fact Morton is the course nutrition, which we believe it will be again this year, if you're somebody who plans to take, and this is for any race, if you're doing a different race, look up the race and see what is offered on course. And if you plan to take that or use that for any part of your nutrition, practice, practice, practice. And I did look up our code. Our code is RUNFAFAD, RUNFAFAD 19, and that's for 10% off. So we can put that in the show notes, but if you order from Running Warehouse.
That's great. And I will give one example just from this week. We have a runner who just ran the Houston Marathon, Megan, and Megan had a great race. She had a 6-minute PR and ran a 3:17. And her last race was with us in the fall was Berlin. And she had a great race in Berlin. She ran a 3:27. She wasn't super thrilled with it because it wasn't her exact goal, but she still ran a strong race. But she didn't buy into at the time the fueling recommendation because she hadn't tried it before of running a fueling every 30 to 35 minutes. And she was still fueling about every 45, 50 minutes, because that's what she had done in the past. And understandably, it's hard to buy into something new like that. But she decided to lean into it more this time. And her training was about the same. And the only difference truly between Megan's race at Berlin and her race this past weekend at Houston was that she fueled every 30 minutes. She took a gel every 30 minutes. And because of that, she felt she had so much more left in the tank, and she finished in 3:17. And dare I say, she said she felt like she might have been able to go even a little faster, but didn't want to push it too much because she really just wanted to get that sub 20, and she sure did. So we're giving that as
one of the— And she said the message she said was, well, I believe in the fueling now, or something like. She was a convert. She thought that really did make all the difference. And so we keep trying to tell people, but it, like you said, it's hard to buy into if that's not what you're used to doing, or you don't feel like you need it, or you get nauseous. And that's why you've got to practice and figure out what does work for you, what's going to be palatable that you can use on race day.
Exactly. And for those who are listening and say, yeah, but I fuel every 45 minutes, it's always worked for me, we're here to say, imagine how much faster you might be by trying to fuel more frequently. Maybe there is more left in the tank for you too. So it's worth a try. And if you're scared to try it in a marathon, try it first in a few workouts or try it in a half marathon. You don't have to try it for the first time in a marathon. Find a race out there where you can experiment, where there's not a lot at stake, and see how it works for you well before race day. So you have time to tweak it. So, So speaking of preparing for a marathon, another thing that we talk about ad nauseum on this podcast is the importance of strength training. And we're so thrilled to present a guest on our podcast who we've talked about a lot over the past few years. And that is my strength training coach, Lauren Bernarth. And Lauren is local to us in the DC area. She has a wonderful gym out of Gaithersburg, Maryland called Sunny and Lauren's, where she and her partner Sunny train folks of all ages and abilities. And I've had the pleasure of working with Lauren for several years, and she's really helped me get through my ACL recovery in conjunction with physical therapy. And so a few weeks ago, we had Josh on, who talked a lot about the importance of strength training and how to approach physical therapy in injury recovery and injury prevention. And this week we have Lauren on to talk about how to incorporate strength training, not just for injury prevention, but also to become a more durable and better runner. So what I loved about this conversation is Lauren has a really unique story on how she got into strength training. I won't spoil it for you, but it's really interesting. And it just shows that sometimes in life, when things happen that you think are bad, actually there are really great outcomes as a result of that. And Lauren is definitely a testament to that. And Lauren also provided in our conversation sort of a quick workout that any runner can implement in their training. And while we provide workouts for our runners through videos that we mentioned earlier, we know there are a lot of folks out there that really want to strength train, but they just don't know what to do. And we get it. It's super overwhelming and there's so much information out there. And so Lauren provided just a very simple set of exercises. We're going to put it in our show notes that anyone can do from anywhere. And we also want to mention that if you're not in a position to be able to work with someone personally like Lauren, who is just fabulous, there are so many resources online. And a couple that are local to us include Lauren, because she does do virtual training as well. And she has generously offered to just our listeners, our Run Farther and Faster runners, an online training program at 20% off. It's a progressive 5-week program for 30 minutes, 2 sessions a week. And she's offering a 20% discount. And we will put that in the show notes as well if you're interested in reaching out to Lauren. There's also another online trainer in our area that we know that does a great job. And his name is Eric Giroux. We talked about him on the podcast and we will mention him in the show notes as well. If anyone in anywhere in the world wants to get in touch with him or Lauren, they both do strength training coaching online. And then of course, there are a lot of free programs available on YouTube. I know a lot of our runners really like Caroline Gervain. It's spelled G-I-R-V-A-N. I personally haven't used her, but I've heard just really great things about her, and you can pull up a lot of free material from her. And then there's also subscriptions, of course, like Peloton. And Peloton's really grown over the years, where it used to be that you kind of like pick a workout here or there. There are a lot of folks that are in this hardcore on the floor group where they have a schedule designed for them. They might not be runner specific. And Peloton's finally got together a lot of strength training for runners programs. And if you're not sure where to start with those, I always start with my favorite running instructor, and he's been on our podcast, Matt Wilpers. His stuff is not fancy when it comes to strength training, but it is on point. And he's another one that also can provide some key exercises to keeping you strong.
One other one I would also recommend some of our runners use, Recover Athletics. It's an app. It's rehab routines for endurance athletes. It's actually connected to Strava too, but I know that we have some runners who really have found that they like that. So it's a very simple app. It connects to Strava and it is specifically for endurance athletes, called Recover Athletics.
I really enjoyed this conversation with Lauren. I think anyone who listens will definitely get something out of it. And if you ever have strength training questions or you're not sure where to start and you're feeling overwhelmed, feel free to reach out to us. While this is not our expertise. We've surrounded ourselves with a lot of folks who are experts in strength training. And if we can't give you the answer, we can at the very least point you in the right direction and help you get a strength training program incorporated into your schedule so you get to the start line strong and injury free. So without further delay, here's my conversation with Lauren Bernard. Lisa, I hope you have a great week.
You too, Julie. Bye.
Bye. Lauren Bernard, welcome to the Run Farther and Faster podcast. I'm so excited that you are joining me today. We talk all the time, but I'm very excited to share you and all of your knowledge with our listeners today. So welcome.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me, Julie. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah. So before we get into the nitty gritty, why don't you share a little bit about yourself, including where you're from, your background, and what you're doing now?
So I am from Maryland, born and raised, went to high school at Gaithersburg High School, went to college at Towson. I actually went to college at Towson for business management. And at the time, knew I wanted to own a business one day. Never in a million years thought it would be a gym. Growing up, I danced, I did gymnastics. I was not a talented athlete by any means. I was an average dancer, an average gymnast. I would not say I was like top tier. So you wouldn't necessarily put me in this category at the age of like 15. Went to college, I did kickboxing. I went to the gym. I stayed active, but no strength training, no formal athleticism, anything like that. I actually got into personal training because I got in a near-death car accident my sophomore year of college. Having life flash before your eyes, you kind of reassess where you're going and what you're doing. And I broke my back in two places, and I was not prescribed PT, which was shocking to me. Something in me was just like, you should probably start strength training.
What year was this? And
2007.
Okay. And what happened?
So it was 2007. Ironically, it was the second day of sophomore year, spring semester of college. And I had started a health class that morning, and the teacher looked at the whole class and she walked in and she goes, "So you're all going to die." And we all kind of looked at her like, that's morbid. Who is this woman? And she was like, "Your first unit's on death. And the faster you accept that you're going to die, the easier this is going to be to teach." And she was like, "I've had kids die during the semester. And like, you know, I just want you to all accept that that's going to be a part of life." And then we were all just kind of like, okay. Ironically, that night there was a snowstorm and I was trying to get back to my parents' house before it got bad. And I slipped on ice. I was in an Accord, got hit. I got T-boned. I lost control of my car trying to avoid a tree. I ended up in the other lane, got T-boned by it wasn't an 18 wheeler, but it was like a big work van. And my car kind of ended up like a triangle TP looking. And they took me to Suburban, to the shock trauma department, which will freak some parents out when you're 20 years old. And so everybody just tried to get there as fast as they could in a snowstorm. And I mean, luckily I was fine. You know, I did not die. I did have a lot of pain. I had to take the semester off college and I was laid up for a while, but I lived and I'm blessed to be able to say that. And now looking back, it changed my entire trajectory and I wouldn't be where I was if that hadn't happened. So I do thank God for it now, but at the time it was definitely a rough patch.
So what happened that caused you to realize you needed PT and what did that look like?
So I actually never did PT. They did like in hospital PT because I was there for, I think like 4 days. It's funny how your brain like blacks out all the things you don't want to remember, but I think I was there for 4 days. I did in hospital PT and I guess they decided she's moving well enough that we don't need to prescribe PT, just rest and it'll heal. So that's what I did. But coming out of it, I don't know where this gut feeling came from because I wasn't familiar with strength training in the least. But I was like, I think I need to hire a trainer. Just something is telling me that this is not going to go well when I'm 50. And I can't even believe I thought that way because I was 20 and all I really cared about was like partying and getting back to college. Like, I don't know where this came from. So I hired a trainer, and I'll never forget it. It was Chantal. She's still around this area. And it was at Lake Forest Sport and Health. And I started strength training, and I just completely fell in love with it. I fell in love with just, it made you feel strong. It made you feel empowered. You do things you never knew your body could do. You pick up weights you never imagined you could pick up. Like, you know, growing up, the weight room was my dad's area, not my area. So it was just, it was very empowering, and it was very eye-opening and life-changing, and really changed my priorities and what I wanted out of life and where I wanted to go with it. And, you know, it led me to new friends, new routines, new priorities. And I just ended up wanting to share that with the world, because I felt like my life was changing for the better. And I wanted to help that, you know, help in that with anybody else who wanted to see it.
That's a great story. So what did that look like? And just briefly share, what happened? Did you obviously returned to school, and how did you approach that? Because that is really tough for a 20-year-old to go through and have your whole life interrupted. I mean, there's so many of us who listen, and I myself have a child in college, and I just, in addition to the trauma of the accident, just all the things that sort of became discombobulated as a result of this. I'm sure so many things in your life changed. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, of course. They did. In fact, I never went back to live at campus. I took my sophomore semester off. And when I returned in the fall, I lived at home. And I decided to set my schedule up to go to school Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I would go to school. My first class, I think, started at noon. So I was trying to avoid rush hour. The drive to Towson's not the easiest. Anybody that knows 695, it's not fun. So I would go, and I would start at noon, and I would just take back-to-back classes until about 4. And then I would just stay in the library. I would do all my studying, all my work then, and then I would take a night class. And that would, you know, you only had to take those once a week. So I was able to stack my classes Tuesday, Thursday, and I had enough library time that I didn't need to do much schoolwork over the weekend. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, I worked in my mom's day spa at the time, and I ran her day spa. And I got so into my gym routine that that's when I would schedule my training. I started taking cycle. I started running. And I was just loving this whole empowering health journey. I didn't really care that I wasn't in college anymore. Like, that stopped kind of phasing me. And eventually I was like, Mom, I think I want to teach some cycle classes. Like, can I work that into my schedule here? So, you know, that's where my fitness career started. But that's kind of how the whole journey unfolded.
Well, props to you, because you still earned your degree after all.
I did.
You could have easily dropped out, and you didn't. So I'm very impressed that you pursued that. And sort of full circle, just a funny story is, when I initially moved to my current neighborhood, I had a very small child, just one, and the spa that your mom owned, you know, I'd go there occasionally as a treat to get my nails done. And I remember seeing you working the front desk, and many years later, you're in a completely different career. And obviously that was 20 years ago now, but I did meet you then. And it's funny that now we're connected in a very different way. So I'm super impressed with how you were able to manage all of that stress and end up where you are today. So talk a little bit about what happened between the time that you started teaching cycling classes and now.
Thank you for that, by the way. That was a fun time. And I do remember you being a client at the spa. And I remember, especially because when I was running, and I'll get into that, I remember seeing you at races. And you were either a volunteer or a pacer or running it yourself. And I was always like, that's Julie from the spa. She's such a good runner. And I always really looked up to you. So thank you for that. You were inspiring since day one. So I started teaching cycling classes, and that was super part-time. I would do it Saturday mornings before I worked. I would do it after work during the week. And I did in conjunction still with my trainer. And eventually I was like, I think I want to train part-time. So I started my personal training certificate after I graduated from Towson, which ended up being late because I missed the semester. So I graduated after the fall semester, I think it was 2009. It was so long ago now. And I signed up to get my personal training cert through NASM. And it took me forever, but the Snowmageddon 2010, I remember being like, all right, I'm going to bang this out. It was so much work. It was honestly harder than my degree because it was just chapter after chapter. And you really had to dig in and learn and understand. And I didn't have a degree in this. So science was not my degree. And this was all very foreign to me. So it definitely took me longer than probably the average, but I banged it out during that snowstorm because I couldn't leave the house for about a week. And then I sat on
it. When you say banged it out, you mean you obtain a certification through the National Academy of Sports Medicine. And I think that's important to note because there are several sources to obtain a certification as a strength trainer. Can you talk about, as a personal trainer, can you talk a little bit about why you selected NASM and what that means?
So NASM, in my research of them, that is the most widely recognized. It is national. You can do it anywhere in the US. So if I wanted to move, it would carry over any state. And in researching different gyms and what they required of you as a trainer, NASM was always there. Some accepted others as well. ACE is also a very good one, ACSM. And there are a bunch online now that actually most of them you can take online now, but NASM was always the top ranked in every place I went to say, like, what would you require as a trainer if I worked here? That was always the first recommended. So in talking to other trainers in the industry, that's what most of them had. And it's just what I decided to do. And it definitely is intensive, very intensive, but it's worth it. So I studied for NASM. I got this cert and a year went by and I did nothing with it. I didn't know where to start. I didn't know what to do. I feel like a lot of people end up in this category when they're changing careers and they're trying to do something on their own. And you're just kind of like, what do I do? So I was teaching a lot of Group X at that point. I was teaching a lot of cycle, a couple boot camp classes. And I didn't really even know how to begin personal training. I interviewed at Rio Sport and Health and I did get the job, but then another client at the spa actually set me up with Eric and Christy at Prime Fitness and got me an interview there. And they were a smaller studio. They had so much to offer in terms of mentoring me. And it just felt a little more personal instead of just jumping into a big box gym with no experience.
For context, Eric Giroux, it was one of the first guests on the Run Farther and Faster podcast. They are the owners of Prime Fitness, which is now a different type of gym after COVID, but Eric continues to train and they are wonderful people.
They definitely are. They definitely helped me get started in this career and they definitely helped me gain some confidence in the field. Cause I really, you get your cert, studying the book and application are two completely different things. So you might know the book and you might know the science and you might know in theory what you're supposed to do. And then you had a client in front of you and you're like, wow, you don't work like a textbook at all. What do I do? So, that's the beauty of it. It's also what makes it kind of hard is every client's different. Everybody has a different goal, a different body. They're coming from a different place, a different background. They have different aches, different pains, different limb lengths, and you have to kind of meet people where they are and assess and tailor the program to them. So while it's very necessary to know everything in the book, it's also very necessary to learn how to apply that in real life. And Eric and Christy really helped me with that. So for them, I taught boot camp. I started personal training. It was pretty part-time personal training and more full-time in the boot camp department. But their boot camp was more of a small group training session. So it was very like one-on-one in a small group setting. So I did get a lot of really awesome experience there. While I was there, I can't remember the exact order of things. I actually don't think I was there when I did this. I taught at Orange Theory. I taught there for, I think, 2 or 3 years, which was phenomenal because I met so many amazing people. And that group camaraderie, like they really do have an awesome community there. And there were so many people that when you're coaching and you're also a one-on-one coach, I think the members kind of pick up on that. And so I had a lot of people, you know, be like, can you train me in conjunction with this and help me make my group performance better? Because I think they might be doing this wrong or that wrong. So I got a lot of exposure doing that, which also a blessing that I ended up there. So many just wonderful stops along my path that are not necessarily linear to the normal trainer, but or to the typical trainer. But following Prime Fitness, I actually worked at a gym called Red Zone. I rented space from the owner, Alex, who was also a blessing. And he allowed me to really grow my fitness, my personal training clientele. So I trained one-on-one. I rented space from him, and he kind of allowed it to be a space where you were able to train. It was your own business. So you ran your training, you took in your money, you wrote your own programs. He had no expectation of you except to pay him at the end of the month, which was great for someone who really wanted to open their own business one day, but wasn't quite ready to take on that whole commitment. Somewhere in that mix, I met Sunny, who was a trainer at Sport and Health, which is where I was coaching or teaching cycle. And the funny story about Sunny is I always admired the way she was she trained. She was her training etiquette was just amazing. She was always very into her clients. She was very attentive. She was very detailed in her coaching and her cueing. And one day I was just like, I just walked up to her. I didn't even know her. And I was like, what are you doing with your life? Like, are you staying here forever? And she was like, no, I think I want to go off on my own. And I'm toying with this idea and that idea. And we just hit it off. And now we're best friends for a while. We lived together, and Sport and Health closed. And she was like, I don't know what to do. This is where I've worked for 10 years. And I was like, come to Red Zone with me. You know, you have the opportunity to take these clients with you because the gym is closing. So we built our businesses together in the basement. And then now we have what is called Sunny and Lauren's, and we opened our own brick and mortar. 2019, it was May of 2019. We got a physical space. We built it up. We got our squat racks and our kettlebells and our cardio equipment. And now we have Sunny and Lauren's, and we rent space to other trainers to help them grow the same way that we did.
And I have to say, it's the most welcoming space. I love training at Sunny and Lauren's. I actually started working with you at Red Zone after I met you through Prime Fitness. You worked with me one-on-one there, and it's been really exciting to see your growth. But what I love most about Sunny and Lauren's, your space, is that it's truly welcoming for athletes of all levels and all ages, which is, of course, how Lisa and I train. We want all runners to feel welcome in our space. And even though we don't have a brick and mortar, we do work with runners of all ages and goals and levels, and you both do the same. And of course, I love that you're similarly women owned, and it's rare to see box gyms like yours women owned. And it's wonderful to see how you conduct your business, how it's grown, and also that you survived and thrived through COVID, which is really remarkable given how tough COVID was on fitness owners who owned brick and mortar spaces. So you all should give yourselves props for that. So now many of our listeners already know this. You're my trainer, but more than that, you were very much part of my recovery journey. When I tore my ACL, I felt very fortunate that I already was working with you. You've always enhanced my running and helped me be a stronger runner. And when this happened, I felt very confident that you would give me what I needed. And I think it's really interesting that is how you came into personal training, was through your own accident, although a different type of injury. Similarly, you were broken and you needed some support to fix you. And that's what you have done and continue to do for me. And I so appreciate that. So before we get into my story, I want to ask you some general questions about runners. And what I hope people take away from this episode today is I want all of our runners listening to come away with how they can approach strength training, even if they don't have someone like you to work with. So let's start out with the negative first. What are some mistakes that you consistently see runners make?
The first and biggest mistake is that they don't strength train at all. So making sure that strength training is a part of your routine if you are a runner is key. I still run, but I did have a short-lived running career. I ran for about 5 years, a lot of races.
It's not that short.
Okay. So it was like a mid-range career. And I will say, like, the one thing I think that saved me from having an injury besides age was I strength trained the whole time. I didn't know at the time, again, that that was what I needed to be doing. But looking back and knowing what I know now, I'm like, oh, thank God I did that. So I think strength training, period, is what needs to happen. Running is a sagittal plane motion, and it is a repetitive motion, and it is an incredible sport. It is so good for endurance, heart, lungs, all the things. It's good for mental strength. It's good for, you know, depression, anxiety, all the things. But because it is repetitive and in one plane of motion, think about the rest of your life. It's not all in this forward motion. So the chances of there being muscle imbalances is pretty high. And so you just want to make sure that you're strength training to hit all those other planes. The other things I see, there's a lack of mobility in some strength training programs that I see runners doing. So ankle mobility, hip mobility, all these things are very important to work on just to make sure that they translate into your running. And then a lot of times I see priority of not necessarily the most important things. So just prioritizing, you know, a lot of runners run. So they think, let me prioritize upper body in my strength training because I'm getting enough lower body running. But strength training your glutes, your hamstrings, your single leg motion, your lateral motion, it's also important and just will enhance your running so much. And throwing a set of arms in is not going to hurt and is important as well. But prioritizing that over the leg strength is probably the number one.
What about runners who use Orange Theory as their strength training? What's your opinion on that? And how do I say this? This isn't a specific, specifically Orange Theory, but just that type of circuit training. I know they offer similar classes at other gyms now. What's your opinion on that? Because a lot of folks do use that to supplement their running and think it's strength training.
So I think programs like that are really great for people who are sedentary. If you're a runner, you have enough in your cardio wheelhouse already that programs like that probably aren't the best bang for your buck. I'm not saying you can't get anything out of them, but what you really want to focus on as a runner is not necessarily your endurance or more intervals on the treadmill or anything like that. It's more so your lower rep high weight strength. So when it comes to that, it's hard to progress in a class like Orange Theory because there's not really time. Like you're at the stations and you're there for a small amount of time. You don't really have the time to warm up to the weight you actually need to use to really take the rest in that you need to take between sets. So you kind of hit a limit there where, you know, and most runners I would see, they'd be like, okay, my goblet squat is 20 pounds. And that would be every time they would pick up the 20 pounds, whether it was for an 8 rep, a 15 rep, it was always 20 pounds. But that limits you because a lot of these people can probably goblet squat 30 pounds, 40 pounds, 50 pounds. And so you're just kind of limited and not necessarily in the right rep range, I should say. You want to be prioritizing the heavier strength training.
That makes sense. I think what draws people to classes like Orange Theory and Body Pump and all those things is that someone is telling you what to do and you don't have to program yourself. So this is my next question. Now that we've talked about some common mistakes, talk to me like I'm in kindergarten and give me a recommendation on how I, as a runner, can incorporate some strength training moves without making it too complicated.
So I would start with some mobility work. I would definitely work. I mean, if you get down on one knee with the other foot in front, like a half lunge stance, and just push your knee kind of over your toe, keeping your heel on the floor, work on some ankle mobility. And then come up tall and push your hips forward, work on some hip mobility, maybe some inner outer thigh mobility. And then I would move on to stretching. I think there's a lot of tight hamstrings, a lot of tight hip flexors, a lot of tight calves, definitely a tight chest, just because, you know, as you run and gravity pulls you forward, you kind of end up with a little bit of a rounded posture. So you want to open all those things up before you start strength training, just to make sure that you are really optimizing your work. After a mobility section, bridges, I think, are phenomenal. That is when you're lying on your back, both legs bent on the floor, and you are contracting your glutes, and you really want to get those glutes firing. Many runners, especially the ones I've trained, either they have a desk job or they're moms and they're driving their kids around all the time, and you're sitting a lot. And so those glutes turn off. And so you want to really get those firing, especially before you run, but in a strength training program as well. Moving on from bridges, I would work on some core work. So dead bugs are a great one. Planks are a great one. Side planks, all of the core stability. And then definitely some single leg work. So a single leg deadlift, single leg balance reach, if you don't have weight or if you haven't moved up to weight yet. I would put a lateral movement in. So lateral lunges, lateral band walks, something of that nature. A rotational move always. So a half kneeling rotation, a Russian twist, a plank rotation, and some Supermans to really work the back posterior side. So the upper back, the glutes, the hamstrings, that'll all get combined in there. That was a lot of information, probably not in the most organized fashion, but the basic program would include all of those things, probably in that order as well.
What about, you mentioned single leg work, what about squats, deadlifts, lunges, things like that? What are your thoughts on those? Push-ups?
I think they're all very important. If you have time to do this more than once a week, excellent to put them all in. If you're strength training once a week and you're on a limited time, I would definitely work on it all single leg before I would work on it double leg. So maybe split stance lunges where you're just stationary, single leg deadlifts. While squats and deadlifts are very important on two legs, I think if you're time crunched, prioritize one leg, just because running is a single leg sport. Push-ups, of course, are important too, but I would actually say that for runners, I would prioritize rows for the posture work, just to make sure that that upper back stays really nice and strong, because that will help you. I mean, even with your breathing throughout running, if you start to kind of fall forward and tighten your chest, that might make your diaphragm a little tighter. So just really keeping that posture nice and upright would be something I would definitely prioritize.
And we'll put this in the show notes too. So for folks who are listening on a run right now, do not worry, we'll add this to the show notes. So you mentioned an optimal general strength training program if you only have time to do it once a week. Can a runner make meaningful change or protect themselves from injury by only strength training once a week?
So it depends. It depends on the runner. I would say that focusing on a productive warm-up is probably very important. So making sure, and I'm sure you go over this with your runners, but how to prep for the run and activating, mobilizing the right things. So if those things are done before each run, you could probably get away with once a week, depending on your time. Ideally, no, 2 to 3 times a week would be ideal. I know that for running, some people, they're already doing that 5 times a week. They might have time constraints. They might have overtraining, you know, issues where adding more time under tension might be too much. So making one strength session really good over three, like, kind of good strength training sessions, I think would be important. But if you have time to do 2 or 3, even better. And I would definitely go for it.
And when you say 2 to 3, how long do you think a strength training session needs to be? Can you do 30 minutes, or do you feel like it needs to be longer than that?
I think 30 minutes is perfectly fine. And I think 30 minutes, like, you can really get a lot done in 30 minutes if you are focused. You know, so as long as you stay focused and you keep your rest times where they need to be, and you really focus on getting the muscle tension, getting the muscle activated, putting your mind on that muscle connection, and just getting the best bang for your buck in those 30 minutes, that is definitely plenty of time.
So for those runners you've worked with or know, what changes have you seen over the years with runners who actually train twice a week?
I would, definitely injury prevention. I find that they end up with less aches and pains as time goes on, the more they strength train. Just less nagging injury. I would also say, I think it helps in their confidence overall. You know, you start to open your horizon as, I'm not just a runner, I also strength train. I'm also strong in all these other areas and look at all these other things I can do. And I think it helps them just mentally feel overall stronger, and feel overall a little more well-rounded. And I think it also helps them in their confidence in running. Like, my body's got this. You know, so I do definitely see less aches, less pains, less injury prevention, but I do see a mental shift that I think is very positive as well.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I see people coming in and out of your gym a lot. And I think that one of the things I see with strength training, whether a runner or not, is that it provides an element of confidence, especially if you're not able to do your other sport, but also you're only comparing you to you. So if you go up in weight in something, you can do that no matter what your age is, and you're going to feel very accomplished versus with some sports, and of course running too, you might be always looking back at your times when you were younger. But with strength training, you can actually get stronger at any age because you can try new moves that you may not have been able to do before. And then working through those new movements, you're getting stronger, and maybe that's a movement you've never done. So I do think that there's a lot of opportunity in strength training that builds confidence outside of your sport.
Yes, I would agree. You hit the nail on the head with that one. That was, yeah, phenomenal. As you get older, you can definitely get stronger. And I love that.
Yeah, for sure. So let's talk about injury. So obviously strength training, while it does provide some armor, it certainly doesn't completely prevent people from getting injured. Let's say you're an injured runner and you're going through PT. What do you say about how strength training is different than PT and similar to PT? And why should an athlete consider doing strength training?
I would say similar and different in that a lot of the mobility, a lot of the core work, a lot of the, you know, like smaller muscle groups, the PT is going to hit that for you. What I think is different is usually when you're seeing a personal or a physical therapist, they are focusing on your injury. So they're focusing on your injured leg. They're focused on getting back the muscle strength around that specific injury. When you see a strength, a personal trainer, a strength training coach, in conjunction, you will work both at the same time. So whereas with your ACL, you know, you would work a lot on your right leg only in personal or physical therapy. But then when you would come to training, we would do a lot of things that would work both legs. And we would really focus on your left leg as well. You'll also work on areas that, you know, like the rest of your body. So while you're doing physical therapy, you know, they'll be focusing on the injury while you have a whole rest of your body left that you could focus on. And really keeping your muscle tissue strong everywhere else in your body will help your injury heal at the same time.
I agree with that. The only thing I would say is in my physical therapy experience, they definitely had me working both sides because we didn't want to have a weakness on the other side. But in the interest of time, I totally agree with you in that I was obviously able to strengthen a lot of other areas aside from my right leg and my left leg when I got to work with you, which was great, and continuing to do that.
Yeah.
So if someone has an injury and they feel like they want to work with a strength training coach, what should they look for and what red flags should they look for?
We'll get the red flags. I mean, red flags, I would probably just say, if you are able to observe a coach and they are giving the same program to every single client from the time they start till the time they finish, it's probably not as much personal training because personal training would be tailored to you. So you'd want to make sure that that coach that you're hiring is really going to carve out the time to write up the program that tailors to your needs. The other thing is, if they don't have a program at all and they're just kind of winging the session, some coaches are talented enough to be able to do that on a whim. I find that programming it out and knowing like what the future holds for your client is very important. So those are the two things I would say to really look for. I guess red flags, the things to look for as far as positives, I would first make sure you connect with the person. There's a lot of vulnerability in personal training. You spend a lot of time with that person and you have to really be able to be vulnerable, be okay failing sometimes, feel like you can trust the person with your goals, your weaknesses, you know. So I think connection is very important, and really feeling like you connect with the trainer. Moving on from there, making sure that they ask the right questions. So asking about previous injury, asking about previous strength training work, asking what you like and what you don't like, because a lot of your, you know, a lot of your results are going to come from a program that you're enjoying doing. So if your trainer is giving you things or, you know, programming in such a way that you're not enjoying the workout, you probably won't make as much progress. And just having them really meet you where you are, care about your goals, understand your goals, your why behind your goals, and just, you know, making sure all of that stuff is covered up front and that you just feel overall comfortable, confident, and like you can really trust the person that you're working with.
Is there a database or anything for folks who want to look for someone that you would trust?
I know that we all have a personal training certificate number. Like I have a certificate number through NASA. I'm pretty sure you can go on the NASA database and search my certificate number. I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know if there's like one big online database that you can type in someone's name and see where they are certified through. That probably does exist. I don't know of it.
Got it. And then understanding that having a strength training coach is a luxury, what do you recommend for folks where that's just not an option right now as an alternative?
So there are a lot of programs online that are just very general that you can find. Even if you just like YouTube, like a basic strength training program, like there are a lot of options out there. There are a lot of, especially after COVID, a lot of online options that are a lot less expensive. And sometimes you can even get a coach for probably half the price to write up programs that you do on your own. So there are some options there. Getting a total body program that just, you know, you want to make sure that it hits the push muscles. So the squat, the overhead press, the push-up, the triceps, you want to make sure it hits the pull muscles. So the deadlifts, anything hamstring related, the upper back, the biceps, all those. And then you want to just make sure there's core involved. So finding a total body program that hits all the different muscle groups, you know, maybe one or two different ways, you can usually find in a good Google search. I wish I had something off the top of my head that I could think of right now. I don't.
I mean, we are online programs. Of course, we do through Coach Kelly Redmond, who's also been on our podcast and is amazing. But we have a lot of runners that use Caroline Gervain, G-I-R-V-A-N, and she's very reputable and she provides a pretty comprehensive strength training program as well. And she can be found through YouTube. I just was curious if you knew anyone who kind of does what you do, but virtually.
I know. I think Eric Giroux now is doing all of his stuff virtually. So, yes. You know, and he's great. So all of his stuff is virtual now. I think he does online, like virtual training sessions, and a lot of coaches you can talk to and kind of, I know with myself, if I was to talk to somebody and they were like, I can't afford a coach, but can you write me a program monthly? I do that. So, you know, that's also something that's an option. So just, you know, talking to someone who's in the field and just saying, this is what I can afford. What can you help me get to? Most coaches will meet you where you are. Like we want to help people. That's why we're in the industry.
That's a great suggestion. That's great. Thank you. So moving on, let's say you are in a great spot where you're strength training twice a week, your running is good. What are some things that you see some of your clients and no specifics necessary or generally the mistakes made outside of strength training that you would like to address?
I would probably say the two most common, and we'll keep it in the running category. I see some overtraining and I see some undernutrition. So under recovery, I would say that could be all encompassing. Overtraining is also under recovering. So that kind of goes together. You have to find the right balance and the right dosage. So you can't run and strength train every single day. So you have to be able to break that up. You have to have a rest day or at least an active recovery day where you just focus on relaxation and stretching or easy movement. And then part of your recovery also, it's your stress management, your sleep, your nutrition, your fueling, your hydration, and even like your social relationships. So like your life outside of fitness has to exist as well. So that's the generic answer. Is there anything you want me to specifically go into within that?
Yeah, I think if you could talk a little bit about your experience about the interplay with stress and nutrition and sleep with what you see in terms of progress, I think that's important for all of us to hear.
So I think it's important to understand that stress is kind of, it's the driver of all of this, right? So if you are under a lot of stress, that's not to say you shouldn't exercise. It's just to say you need to watch the exercise because exercise is also stress on the body. It's good stress, but it can become bad stress depending on how it's dosed. So if you wake up one day and you are extremely stressed out and you have something going on with your kids or a really hard deadline at work, it's okay to say, this is going to be not, you know, I'm not going to run this run the way I planned on it. I'm going to take it down a level, or I need to take this morning and to get a few extra hours of sleep and push this workout. Like it is okay to veer off the plan. And I can say that with confidence because I have been there where I've been like, I don't want to get off my plan. I'm doing it anyways. It never turns out good. So I think that's a big thing. Sleep is going to help regenerate every process in your body. So if you are stressed and then you're not sleeping on top of that, it's kind of compounding the problem. So prioritizing sleep is definitely important, especially if you would like to excel in your athletics. Getting that the brain to fire the way you need it to fire is only going to happen with adequate sleep. Nutrition, again, if you don't have enough nutrition, that's stress on your body as well. You have to have enough fuel to provide you the energy to get through the workout. So if you are underutilizing your food and your hydration, your workout is not really, you know, like the progress there is not going to be great. You'll probably get injured before you get, you know, your PR. So making sure that you understand what you need to eat, when you need to eat it, how much you need to eat, and making sure that you really prioritize that is sometimes more important than the workout itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And with respect to nutrition, do you have sort of some general recommendations that you can provide around strength training workouts that you'd like to share, including any sort of general supplements that you sometimes recommend for clients?
So I think the biggest thing with nutrition, especially for athletes, is protein. I think it is not, I think people aren't as aware of their protein intake. I think they think it's higher than it is. So a general guideline for athletes is you want to get about 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight. So if you are 150 pounds, that's 150 grams of protein. Now that's very generic. That's very basic. What does that even look like? And most people I find they're like, they might know that they should be doing that, but they don't necessarily know what that looks like. How much protein is in a chicken breast? How much protein is in an egg? How much protein is in your protein shake? And at the end of the day, what does that all add up to for me? So becoming aware of what you're eating or what you're not eating, I think is the first thing. So kind of take an inventory. What are you eating right now? At each meal, where is my protein? How much of it am I eating? What does this amount to in grams? And by the end of the day, where am I? And just kind of take an inventory and see what you're missing or what you're not missing. Congrats if you're not. And taking it from there, supplementation. So supplements, I usually say, add them as a last resort. So if you're doing everything that you can be doing and you still are, you know, you're medically needing something, or your doctor prescribes you, asks you, you know, something's low on your lab work. Those are some times you definitely want to supplement. Protein at the end of the day is a supplement. I do use protein powder. So that is a supplement I do recommend. I do use pre-workout. That's a supplement, you know, so caffeine. I take vitamin D, I take zinc, especially after COVID. So those are two that are high on my list. But other than that, I really don't supplement unless it's a one-off. Like right now, after our conversation, I'm taking a probiotic, I'm on an antibiotic. So, you know, that's a supplement that I threw in there. But I try to use supplements as a last resort. I try to make sure everything comes from real food first. And then what you might be lacking once you've done everything else that you can do is where you want to look for supplements.
Yeah, I think that's a great recommendation, particularly with respect to supplements, because I think sometimes, especially people who work in the field you work, they tend to over supplement. There's a lot of potions and powders out there marketed to folks who work out in the gym space. And I like that that isn't something that you feel is necessary to be able to optimize your training. At the same time, I also appreciate your emphasis on fueling. I think a lot of athletes make the mistake when they're not doing cardio and they're doing lifting to not eat enough beforehand, because it doesn't feel like you're burning as much energy. So in your mind, you're kind of like, well, I don't need to eat as much. So do you want to talk a little bit about sort of what a pre-workout meal should look like before doing strength training, or snack, depending on the time of the day?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So pre-workout is somewhere where you'd want to have a little bit of protein and actually a higher amount of carbs right there, because that's going to be your quick energy. So I wouldn't have just a carb, but, you know, maybe I'll recommend a lot of times, like maybe a yogurt and a banana, that like a Greek yogurt that has a higher protein count. Some people like to do toast with peanut butter. So something that it depends on your digestion, how fast you're able to digest it. You know, you don't want to eat something and then walk right in the gym. That might make you feel a little nauseous, but it depends on who you are and how you digest. I typically have my lunch about an hour before I work out. So that is a quarter pound of usually ground turkey, ground chicken, ground beef with, you know, I have a cup of rice and some vegetables, and like I load it all up. And then an hour later, I'm able to work out on that. That might be too big of a meal for some people. They might do better with a snack, but it's extremely important to eat before your workout, especially a strength training workout.
Yeah. And especially for runners who are trying to squeeze in strength training, we always recommend, Lisa and I, that strength training be done after a run, and for it, ideally not right after a run, but we also understand whenever you can fit it in, fit it in. But in that situation, you have to eat twice at least. You got to eat before your run. You got to eat after your run before your next workout. And just planning ahead is really important to make sure that you think of each segment of your workout, your run, and then your strength training session as two separate workouts versus one long continuous workout, because you're working different systems. Yeah,
exactly. That's so great. And you want to put some carbs back in your system and a little bit of protein before you start your strength training workout, or else you're starting it depleted. And, you know, that's not the best way, the most optimal way to build muscle when you're in such a depleted state.
Absolutely. So I could talk about you about this stuff with you forever, but we've kind of run the gamut. But before we go, I just want to ask you if there's any specific advice that I may have missed in asking you with respect to runners and strength training that you'd like to impart on our listeners, and then also how our listeners can find you.
Advice. We have talked on so many topics. I'm trying to think if there's anything that we missed as far as strength training. What really helps me is find the passion in it, find the fun in it. So whatever way you're able to make it work for you, that you find it fun and enjoyable. And I find that that yields the most success. So where you can fit it in, where you can really enjoy what you're doing, where you're finding passion, success, while you're smiling while you do it. I mean, whatever that looks like to you is the best way to do it for you. You know, don't feel like you have to do it the way that everybody else on your team is doing it, or everybody else in your run group is doing it. Like, what works for you, that's the way to go. So that's usually my advice there, is just find what works for you and stick to it. how to find me. Instagram is probably easiest. We are at Sunny and Lauren's. My personal Instagram is at Lauren Nicole Bear. So first name, middle name, last name, B-E-A-R. That's just the beginning of it. And then my Facebook is Sunny and Lauren's as well. We have a website, sunnyandlawrence.com. Just fill out the contact us section and we will get back to you within 24 hours. And I think that's all of them.
Well, Lauren, thank you so much for talking with me today. It was such a pleasure. And I love hearing your story. And I love just the full circle of how we initially met and now you're training me. And thank you so much for all that you've done for me over the last year and continuing to do for me to keep me healthy and strong. I love my sessions with you. I appreciate them greatly. And I'm so happy that I was able to share your journey with our listeners today. So thanks for taking the time to talk with me. And I look forward to seeing you again in the gym on Thursday.
Oh, thank you so much, Julie. Thank you for having me. And I hope everybody enjoyed the episode, got something out of it. And Julie is an inspiration as well. So thank you for sticking by me as, you know, your ups and downs and everything in between through your injury.
Thanks, Lauren. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Run Farther and Faster Boston Marathon podcast. We want to give a special thanks to our editor, Aaron Bryant. And if you enjoyed this episode and enjoy listening to our podcast, please share it with others. And please leave a review if you haven't done so already on iTunes. Thanks for listening and have a great week.